This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today's guest is actually today's guests, I'm happy to say. We are with Mary Ann Rodmacher and Liz Kallock, thank you, dear. Co-authors of She, A Celebration of Greatness in Every Woman. I do want to say right off the bat, it is a gorgeous looking book. It is just sumptuous, which I guess kind of reflects the feel you want to get across about the women. Oh, they're just glamorous and rich and colorful and okay. So I'm going to start. This is actually going to be Mary Ann's love letters discussion. But Liz, when you have something to say or something to add or you want to call on Liz, please do. So the three of us are here, although we're basically talking to Mary Ann. Mary Ann, tell me just about you, whatever is just most compelling in your life as you think back on it that got you to where you are.
The reason I love talking with you today, Janet, is that one of the driving forces in my life has been mail and letters.
M-A-L-E.
M-A-I-L.
There you go.
Postal. Mm-hmm. The United States Post Office offers what I believe is still the best bargain the country.
49 cents, you get to send someone your whole heart.
From your doorstep, winging across the country to their knocking on their door. It's magic.
And by the way, as far as corporations go, nobody has this pedigree. It's the oldest one.
Thank you,
Benjamin Franklin. Their mission is to be the bond of scattered families. Oh, more on that later. So what was your first experience? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and my first experience with the mail was envy. Because it was an outside mail slot into an indoor receptacle that had a wrought iron door that you raised up. And it was as if you were getting mail, presents every day.
Yes, it is. It is a present every day.
Well, it was a present for everyone else in my family.
Oh, but
I had the job. I got to go look and gather and deliver. But it was never for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I was old enough to grasp the concept of sending mail, I started doing two things at a very young age.
What? And how young an age?
8.
Okay, good. Because there's no age too young.
I would go with my allowance to the pharmacy three blocks away and buy a greeting card whose image appealed to me. Mm-hmm. And then I would take my father's sheet of typewriter correction sheet, and I would overline the ridiculous things that I found written on the inside of the card, and I would write my own sentiment.
Good. Oh, okay. So that is such a part of actually my love letters workshops, is you take those cards and you make them your own. Because Hallmark may come close even once in a while to how you feel, unless you really think about how you feel. And then Hallmark doesn't know how you feel, but you know how you feel. Oh, so what were the kinds of things that you sent to people, and to whom did you send them?
I sent them to my aunts, and I made poems of sorts, but mostly I was trying to say, I think of you, and I know you're far away from me, and this reminded me of you. And nothing has changed.
Right.
When I send a card today, I'm telling my friends, I think of you.
Isn't that, by the way, I think of you, four words, that is certainly a love letter.
Yes.
The only shorter one, I guess, is I love you. Well, there could be shorter ones. But yes, four words, and that's how short a love letter can be.
Well, and the one word would be here.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Now, okay, so that could be H-E-R-E or
yes.
H-E-A-R, both of which could have significance, right?
Yes.
Which were you thinking?
H-E-R-E.
Mm-hmm.
So my second experience with mail was recognizing that the U.S. government, back in the day, we won't say what day that is.
I'm going to get to it, though, yes, because
The Bureau of Land Management wanted to support youngsters and their interest in the world and in the environment and in national parks. So I looked on a map and determined all of the states that interested me, and found out how to write to the head ranger. And I wrote love letters to that head ranger's state, the ranger of that state.
And what did you get, Richard?
Oh, my goodness. I got treasures. I got maps. I got pins. I got hats.
Can I just tell you something?
Yes.
I did the same thing. And but I used to find little coupons in the National Geographic that you could fill out and write to those states and get those with your letter. So you didn't have to go to the trouble of looking them up. But the fact that you went to that trouble means the gift that you designed for them, that is your love letter, mm-hmm. a custom designed gift for one person in this world, was really a reflection of even more work.
And really was.
And devotion.
Really the roots of my love of finding things out and researching and knowing that I don't know, mm-hmm. but that I know how to know. Mm.
Yes. That's wonderful. So you started writing love letters at 8, and you started getting your own little gifts in that wrought iron container.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so delicious.
Some of them were too big for the wrought iron
sure.
magic inside sure. chute, so they went inside the screen door.
Yes.
The maps those were really
big. Did you get little notes in return?
Yes.
Notes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was the most amazing thing of all.
That is the most amazing thing. And a handwritten letter to somebody, I think, never goes unremarked. On the other hand, you didn't do it for that.
Right.
Well, you did want to get something in the mail. That's only
well, I was. Yes. But that was a specific that I was asking for,
right.
brochures,
right.
maps, information. I wasn't asking them to write me back.
Right, exactly.
I wasn't looking for a pen pal.
Right. Now, what about that feeling? I'm just curious how you felt about this. You write a letter to somebody, and it's very clear to me that when you write a love letter, it's a gift. What do you have a right to expect in return? Nothing.
Right.
You probably will, but the joy of it, I think, is the gift you send, like when you slip it into that mail slot.
Well, and as you say, slip it into the mail slot, I, as a child, spent many of my weekends on the Nehalem River, where my family had a little parking spot for mm-hmm. our mobile pull-along. Mm-hmm. And I sent messages in bottles.
Oh.
With the outgoing tide.
Oh, tell me about that.
Every weekend, I would send a message in a bottle.
You just fling it.
I would sit on the dock mm-hmm. and compose it, and then I would wrap it in wax paper. Mm-hmm. And so, and... Yes, plastic wrap was invented then.
That's listen, okay. You get a free pass somehow on this.
And then I meticulously sealed at the top of the bottle in all of the ways mm-hmm. that were available to me and tested it, dunking uh-huh, it into uh-huh. the river. Uh-huh. And when I saw, to my satisfaction, that it was watertight.
Yes. Those bottles will retain things watertight for much longer than you think, even without plastic wrap, actually.
And yeah. I'd say a dozen rubber bands went into the enterprise of each message in a bottle, sealing the top.
Oh, I see.
Over and
yes,
over.
Yes,
and
yes. Yeah. Because you could dunk it in crazy glue now.
Now, you could dunk it in lots of things now. But
right.
to the child that I was just using the resources.
Yes,
that were,
well, how devoted and clever. So did anybody ever find one and get back to you? Did you sign your name
no,
so they could find you?
No, well, I signed hearts and my first name, but I never did it with the expectation of, it was never, I want to measure how, it was never scientific.
Mm-hmm.
It was always whimsical. I wonder how the person will feel.
Yes, exactly.
When they get this.
So that's, so you're relating that to slipping it into the mail slot.
Yes.
Exactly. Because that joy of somebody's going to be happy when they get this. I've had a couple of people come to me with messages in bottles that they found, and it is like finding gold. It's an astounding experience to get
what
it.
Are
oh,
the,
good for you that you did
what are
that.
The odds?
Well,
that's what you say. What are the odds that this message would come to
right.
me
well,
at
it,
this moment?
It depends on where you fling it, really. I mean, if you do it in kind of a cove or a river, Maybe the odds are greater that it will reach the other side of the river or get carried. In the ocean, in the middle of the ocean, probably not great odds, but you never know. You never know. I have a friend who told me about a message in a bottle that he found on the shores in San Francisco. And I said, oh, could I see it? I mean, I was just drooling. And he said, no. He said, I read it, and then I tossed it back into the ocean so it could continue its journey.
Oh.
I know. So many lovely ways to handle these things. Tell me how you came to start this book. And did you grow up wanting to write more than letters?
Yes.
And what else did you do in your life? I mean, when did you start the writing, and what brought you to this?
I started writing when I was 2. I left a long stay in a hospital where I had been treated to interns and doctors and practitioners reading textbooks to me.
So you were how old when you were in the hospital?
I was under 2.
Oh.
So I was.
And how long were you there?
Almost 5 months.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, when I went home, I wondered why my family members weren't wearing blue costumes.
Oh, yes.
They were in odd, yeah. Odd clothing. So the folks didn't want me to feel isolated because mm-hmm. I was so young, so they read their textbooks to me.
Oh.
And it gave me this incredible love of words that roll off your tongue and mm-hmm. how you can, even to this day, people will hear me pronounce the H in the middle of a word because I want every letter to have its due.
Yes.
Because that's how those medical people taught me. And so I wrote something of great importance to me on the Breakfast Nook wall after I was released from the hospital.
So you were at that point almost 3, is it?
No, I was just a little over 2.
Oh, I see. So young 2. Okay,
young,
go ahead.
Young 2.
Okay.
And I tell people that I learned then that critics don't really count.
Oh, bingo.
Because my mother didn't like what I had produced.
Oh, really? What happened?
Well, not good things.
Oh. Wait, she didn't like what you produced, or that you produced it all over a wall?
It made no sense to her because, of course, I was 2.
Right.
And I was articulating what I felt compelled were great thoughts.
Can you remember what they were?
No, I just know that I was pressed to communicate.
Yes.
And they couldn't have been actual letters, I don't think. And the yellow oil-based paint in the Breakfast Nook was quickly painted over, so it's not like there's a photo right. demonstration of what right. I did.
But she didn't offer you paper or cardboard or anything. She didn't
no.
realize what you needed to do.
No.
Okay.
But I found paper and cardboard.
Yes, I'm sure you
on
did.
My own. And
bottles and rubber bands.
Always was gifted in the written word. So what I longed for as a child and as a teenager was to be an artist. And in my journals, there were whole pages dedicated to just huge writing. I want to grow up and be an artist. And no one in my life experience, including the freshman art teacher at my high school who did not jury me into the freshman art program at my high school she said, you're a writer. You have no artistic talent.
Oh, golly.
You should just.
And she got her credential.
Of course. So, you know, that was somebody telling me what was what.
Well, you, not quite.
Well,
that was somebody telling you what was wasn't. Actually, from out here, it sounds
I love that.
Oh, my goodness.
So, turns out that all that saying all those years, I want to be an artist, kind of just accidentally snuck up on me. And
good.
One day, I noticed I was.
Well, I notice you are here with this book. Can we talk about the book a little bit?
Well, sure.
Because I want to know, are these actually drawings that you did or images that you found and did other things with putting them together in this beautiful way?
Here's
what?
The story that Liz comes in to speak to you about, because our co-authorship is using 2 different kinds of symbols.
Mm-hmm.
I use the symbol of characters in writing, and she uses the symbol of graphic imagery.
That makes sense because each page, each thing is so relevant. I mean, it's such a braiding together of those 2 ways of, yeah.
Well, uh-huh. And you just used the word that I describe our collaborative style, which is serpentine.
Yes, there you go.
We go out, we weave in.
Okay, so ready. So isn't that nice that that's so clear?
Yes.
To a newcomer who looks at your book. So you've done what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. I love when that works out. Okay, so why the subject she? Why a celebration of greatness in every woman?
Because
how did you come up on that?
I wrote a piece in 1997 that's titled She, that seizes and captures the variety of expressions that I perceive in every woman. Mm-hmm. And I also titled it Living Eulogy because I wanted it to be how I am known now and how I will be remembered when I'm gone.
Oh, just give me a hug. This needs to be a television moment because the expression on the face here someday.
Thank you.
Okay, the Living Eulogy. Love Letters Live started with my doing a eulogy, actually an obituary, that I didn't want to do. And then I thought, why not do them and send them ahead as love letters?
Yes.
Eulogies are love letters.
They are.
So to hear you say that just makes me extra happy.
So that begins, the Living Eulogy begins the book. And Liz and I both have extraordinarily strong and influential women in our lives.
Oh, that's what I was getting to next.
And
thank you
actually,
for reading my mind.
Liz is one of those women
yeah.
for me,
yeah.
As it happens.
So how did that happen? How did you meet, and how did she become that woman in your life? Either one of you, Liz, you can tell it.
Oh, we met.
Uh-huh.
We didn't meet in person until actually 3 or 4 years ago. But we met, she was an artist that was licensed through a company that I started working at as
you
an,
were an art
director. Yes.
So you were an artist.
I
you
was.
Actually became
I am.
When we get
I
back
was.
To that.
I am.
Okay.
I started working at a gift publishing company as mm-hmm. an art director, and she was a licensed artist, so I was working on her pieces, and we would talk. I would send her proofs, mm-hmm. and we would talk on the phone, and then the conversations got longer.
Oh,
and,
I love when that happens, yes.
And then there was lots of sharing moments of
yes,
what was happening in our
yes.
own lives beyond
right.
the work that we were doing together.
As that span of time where people who were meant to be connected go from hello to how are you today mm-hmm. to here's everything I've been thinking for the last month is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Liz. Please.
So that was pretty much the basis and the terms of our friendship for quite a number of years.
So it was a long distance trust
yeah.
right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you came to the Bay Area. Oh, I remember because that's right. I was interviewing for other work, for different work, and interviewed for an art director position for a local publisher. Didn't end up working out, but one of the pieces in my portfolio was a calendar of hers.
Oh.
And
so you were already partners.
Yeah.
Oh, and in an amazing way. Listen to this.
I had forgotten that story totally. That's so funny. So I did the interview and we're going through my portfolio and we're having this great conversation. And the editor that was there with the publisher at the interview said, "And do you know Marianne Rodmacher?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah." Uh-huh. And could you put her in touch with us? Or could you put us in touch with her to talk to her about a book deal? And I was like, "Well, let me call her."
This was a surprise to you?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I said, "I'm reluctant to give you her phone number talking to her. But sure, I'll get in touch with her." And
wonderful.
Yeah. And so.
And so Brenda Knight called me and said, after I met Liz, I went online to find your other books, and you don't have any.
Uh-huh. Well, everybody has to start with one. Exactly.
Well, and I had my company had produced chapbooks of my poetry for years.
Okay.
But not a flat-spined, mm-hmm. bound book.
So I want to hear about your poetry. Now, you did all this writing. This is
yes.
all. Now, is this, this is definitely what you would have to call modern poetry.
Yes.
Is that what you are saying?
Yes.
Is now your poetry?
Well, I do write what an academic would call actual poetry.
tree.
Well, I don't think there's such a thing.
Well, really. There is. Well, there's meter and form.
Oh,
and,
right.
But those things.
But even yes. But
so people would more readily call this poetic prose.
Okay, that's okay. But it's still your poetry. Is what I meant. Yes,
it is indeed.
Yes, because I was talking to somebody recently about how poetry has changed over decades and centuries. And they are short stories in a different way than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for?
Well, I'm turning the page for you to read aloud to your listeners, She, the Living Eulogy.
Why don't you read it? Why don't you read it? Because it's yours. I'd be honored to read it, but since you're sitting here, it should be from your voice.
She dances, she sings, she takes, she gives. She serves, she loves, she creates. She is fierce. She dissents, she enlivens. She sees, she grows, she sweats, she changes. She learns, she laughs, she sheds her skin. She bleeds on the pages of her days. She walks through walls, she lives with intention.
That's wonderful. That is just beautiful. And, of course, every sentence is its own freestanding little poem, actually. I want to talk to you about one that just really struck me, that she changes. Because people struggle, in a way, so hard not to change. And I once was dating a man long time ago, who thought it was a romantic thing to tell me, you are so perfect the way you are. Promise me you will never change. I know you look like you're going to vomit, but wait. Promise me you will never change. And I said, are you insane? And that was it. I mean, how anybody, and I think that's just kind of a misconception.
Oh, it is.
That, I mean, you know, women sometimes, this is just kind of a separate thing, but related. Women, as they get older, will somehow be still wearing the same bra size they wore when they were 18 and wondering why they're uncomfortable and it doesn't fit and it looks ridiculous. And somebody told me that once, you know, that they had gone into the store and the woman said, you know, you don't wear this bra size anymore. No wonder you're... And I started to laugh and I said, could you please tell me the one thing that never changes? Tell me the one thing that never changes.
You breathe.
Well, but that can change.
Well, when you
die.
Your
social security number.
Oh, it's
like the only thing that never changes. And everything else should change. And that should too these days, by the way. But anyway, yes, that's such an important thing to talk about.
Well, and I'll talk
about the beauty of change.
And I'll talk about it in this way.
Do.
People who wish to not change live in a state of continuous disappointment. Mm-hmm. Because it's not...
To themselves and to others.
Everyone. Because the world is our mirror. Our natural world is our mirror of how we are as living things.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person that adores snow is perennially unhappy in summer. Oh.
I see what you're saying.
Where's the snow?
You're talking about universal change.
Well,
yes,
and,
that too.
And the universal change is our model.
Yeah.
Because you go from season to season, and mm-hmm. who you are in your teens is not who you are when you're 30, is not who you are when you're 43.
Right. And by the way, the women and men these days, oh, God help us all, who don't want to change and want to still look like they're 18 and 20, and they're 80. I know you're frowning because it's a terrible sight.
And it's such hard work.
And it doesn't work. It's hard work that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, change. That's so lovely. Okay, I'm so glad you're talking about that. Maybe you'll talk about that, too, when you have your love letters. I could talk about that for hours. But this isn't about me. It's about you. So I want to ask you, right now, given that you would have to write, I'm going to say to you, who gets your love letter today? Now, somebody's got to get one. Maybe someone who hasn't gotten one before. Who would that be? And it could be to yourself. It can be to anyone who's not here any longer. Who gets your love letter today?
This is my book.
Aren't you prepared? Yes.
Of love letters.
Okay.
And I write This is, my goal is to have these completed by the end of the year. This is a full out, full sheet of correspondence. But I carry.
So you live that way.
I do. And I carry little 2x2 cards that have loving messages on them. And when I meet a stranger, if it's a clerk at a store or someone I'm walking past who looks unhappy or in any way less than engaged with what they're doing, I offer them the choice of a card.
How nice.
And it is a little living love letter. And I don't wait.
Is it in your handwriting?
Some of them are.
Because I bet some those are just...
They're all an inso circle. So it's a symbol of infinity, a colorful circle. And so the words are within a colorful circle. And sometimes they're in my lettering. Sometimes they're typeset. And I don't stay around to get a response.
Okay.
I just go.
Another critical issue is reading a love letter is private. Yes.
I'm following the love letter.
But don't you think? Obviously you think. Because I say, you know, even in workshops, if you're writing a love letter to somebody you live with or somebody you're out to dinner and you want to hand it to them, you can't stare at them while they're reading it.
Oh, no, no.
Or if it's in the house, you can leave it on the pillow and then go to a movie.
Give them their moment.
That's right. To absorb it and not have to come back with a response.
Because it's a letter.
And it's a gift.
If you wanted a conversation, you should just say
start
it.
Start one. Yes. Oh, gosh. You just touched on so many important things. I can picture, since you are the co-author of this gorgeous book, I can picture, given that you have the personality to talk to strangers who might look sad, of carrying beautiful stationery with you, like a little pad of something. And if you see that, just write it down on a hand with your handwriting.
Well, actually, what I do carry is vintage University of Notre Dame watermarked from the 1950s. I still have about 50 sheets of that left, and old postmarked envelopes from the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Oh my.
And I do that.
That's wonderful.
I do pull that sheet out and then write it.
Yes. That is such an extra gift. Handwriting is king.
Oh.
I wish. See, that's why I need a TV now. Look at your beautiful face smiling like that. You can barely contain yourself. Me too. Okay. Oh, thank you for doing this with me.
Oh, it was so
and
fun.
I'm so glad that, you know, sometimes people say, well, I'll write a love letter to, and they'll name a person. But, you know, then there's and love letters, writing love letters is a way of life. It's not a one-shot deal.
That's right.
And as you go on, and those things, I saw something here, and I'm not going to find it now because we only have a couple of minutes, but it was talking about planting a seed under the earth and somehow having the patience to wait till it breaks through.
That's talking about optimism and hope.
Yes, that's right. And one of my favorite concepts is optimism and hope, expressed in the philosophy that will sound familiar, partly because I just say it all the time, and partly because it's a well-known, that perfect faith is planting a tree under whose shade you know you will never sit.
Oh, how Talmudic of you.
Yes, and exactly. And I feel the same about love letters. You know, you send one out, and you do not know where it's going to land, because in two generations, your grandchildren, your great-grandnieces and nephews, friends, or a stranger who opens some door in a house that you used to live in and finds it, and it will have influence forever, as you are going to do with your writing and artwork.
Thank you.
Oh, this is beautiful. I hope. Okay, so She, A Celebration of Greatness in Every Woman, website?
MarianneRodmacher.net.
Okay.
And
LizCallickDesigns.com.
Okay. Marianne Rodmacher, MarianneRodmacher.net. And you can go there. You can also go to, well, will you have a link to getting this through
this book,
Please Press or
this
Viva Editions, rather?
This book, we would love every she and every he who loves a she to purchase this book at full price from their independent bookseller.
Oh, I see. Good. Okay. That's
because
nice to know.
In that, you are supporting the publisher, our work as writers and artists.
Yes.
And the person who has the courage to still be maintaining a bookstore.
Good. Okay. So, and that you said every woman, every she, or every he who loves a she. May I just add, every he who is a little fearful of a she.
Yes.
And doesn't love a she, but would like to.
And every he that recognizes the divine feminine within himself.
Oh, that too. The best men are the ones with the good feminine side.
Yes.
Yes, don't we all know that? Okay, thank you for doing this with
You're
me.
You're welcome.
And
thanks.
Please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is that special occasion. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. We'll talk to you later.